Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. You're back. You're fresh.
I am back. I am fresh.
I can smell it. That's terrible.
That got really weird really fast. I am back from vacation. I took a week off. I haven't taken a week off in a very, very long time. So I just took a week. No, or at least not much internet. I had basically Twitter on my phone, but even then my phone signal was like, I walked in one corner of the cabin, it was like a little itty bit of LTE, and then I walked to the other side of the cabin, and then it was like a little itty bit of like 3G, so it was hardly any signal.
Yeah, so you had like a corner where you could maybe possibly be notified of something cool, and another corner where it's just like, let's just relax, guys.
Exactly, it was the signal wasn't even strong enough for like my email to auto-update, so it was like, once kind of every other day, I was like, hi, I haven't gotten any new emails. And then it's like, I'd go into my email and open it up and it'd be like, shabam, you have 80 emails. I was like, oh.
Yikes.
Click. Close.
I think like, you know, when I went on parental leave, I came back. I can't even remember. Maybe I blocked it out of my memory, but it was a good amount of emails, like a scary amount. And when I was gone for 3 days and I came back for like, well, I guess five if you include the weekend these type of days. But it was like 80 emails, and I'm like, ugh, guys, there's an out of office symbol on there. Just like, I don't know.
Just don't, yeah.
Bug somebody else. You know, maybe they just like to hear from Robot Ryan, who's away on vacation. But no, I'm glad you're back. I'm glad you took a week off. It's mighty tempting to do. Honestly, it's something that I think in future years I will set aside a week to myself and my family in January, because I find the worst thing you can try to do is try to figure out a vacation and it's too late. Like, it's inside the house, you know, like you can't get out. You're not safe. It's gonna get you. Vacation isn't happening. Work is around the corner. And I feel like that would be, that's something that I need. That's something an adult does, plan their vacation months in advance. I haven't got to that part in my life. I'm gonna take a Tuesday, Friday off kind of deal so I can wait for Amazon to not deliver Splatoon 2. Amazon.
Yeah, and that was kind of the thing, is that not only was this a vacation for me, but it was a mostly unplugged vacation. Like,
good.
We played mostly board games. We did like a little bit of Mario Kart one night, but that was it because I did take the Switch with me. But yeah, it wasn't a crazy gaming holiday, and I think I needed the break to kind of recharge. Of course, the time I took for a break was also San Diego Comic-Con time, so I missed a whole bunch of stuff. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. First, I want to talk about what we have been playing. So, Ryan, why don't you go first? You've been playing Injustice 2?
Yeah, so I'm a couple months behind the eight ball on this one, but Injustice 2 is a DC fighter. It's obviously a sequel to Gods Among Us that came out on Xbox 360, PS3,
360, yeah.
Yeah, and PC. And there was a remastered version that came up, a kind of up-resed on PS4. I believe it was even free for PS Plus at one point. And I normally am not a big fan of fighting games. Fighting games, to me, represent the prime example of, Ryan, you're terrible at video games. You know?
See, I love fighting games because I always feel like I'm so good at them because I just, like, totally mash all my buttons and then, like, somebody falls over.
But see, that's the thing, is yes, Injustice 2 is one of those fighting games that kind of supports the fact that if you learn a couple combos and mash X, A, Y in a specific order, sometimes you will do cool stuff, including the fact that the way Injustice works is it's all DC heroes, some you know of, like this typical Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, but then some you may not have seen very much of, like Dr. Fate or Gorilla Grodd. I know Gorilla Grodd has kind of come back into people's minds because of the Flash TV show, but I'm trying to think of some other ones.
Oh, I don't watch the Flash TV show.
Yeah, I know someone was starting an email or a tweet or something, but there's a lot of like no names in there, and as well as some missing characters as well that you would have thought, because this is a sequel and very single player campaign focused. There were some characters that died in the original game. Including in the very opening scene, Joker in Injustice 1, but they did bring him back because it's the Joker. Just as a fighter, he's like in the story for a brief second, but it's a hallucination, and that's how kind of justify the fact that Joker's in this again. But you couldn't do a DC game without Joker. But he's all Suicide Squad or something.
The whole idea of Injustice is like it's two factions fighting against each other. It's Batman versus Superman, basically, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, is it the Joker kills Lois Lane and then Superman goes all rogue?
Yeah, so in the first one, and they kind of recap a bit of the first one to the point where you kind of feel like if you missed the first one, you're only maybe wondering at a few little, you know, clips and blips that pop up. But yeah, in the first one, Superman kills Joker because Joker tricks Superman into killing Lois and nuking Metropolis, killing millions. And he basically confronts Mr. Nice Guy and no more Mr. Bad Guys. And he just takes his fist and shoves it through Joker. And basically, in the second one, it starts off as a flashback to kind of explain a little bit more about that conflict. It's weird how a game that came out years ago and a game that came out a couple months ago created a better story than a majority of the DC movies that have come out. I have not seen Wonder Woman yet, and I will say from the positive stuff I've seen of Wonder Woman and just the super negative, really mean Wonder Woman in this game, I think most people would prefer Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman. But that being said, this is a very excellent DC story and feels... it feels like a good comic book story, which I feel you don't get a lot of in video games. Usually they just kind of say, hey, here's another bad guy for you to fight. Go on to the next level type thing.
So speaking of fighting bad guys, because you did obviously mention this is a fighting game and not normally a genre that either one of us gets really into. So there's enough single player content. And when you're going through the single player content, what is that play style like? Is it very much like a just... confrontation between two characters in a fighting game, or do you get to do like some exploration, or like how does the single player kind of roll out?
So it's basically fight for a cutscene reward, and the cutscenes in this game are top notch. Some of the best cutscenes done in engine in many games that have come out in the past, like almost, you know, reaching that level of Uncharted cinematics. Very well done. The voice, the mocap is very great. It's honestly, it's on par with what you see in Uncharted. Very solid stuff, and really brings the characters to life. But the way the chapters work is, it starts like, okay, this is the Batman chapter, and you know going in, it says like chapter one, the name, and then Batman, and you kind of follow Batman for that small chapter, whether he's fighting Superman or other people. And as the cutscenes play, it immediately transitions into the fight. Like seamless. So you're watching a cutscene, then all of a sudden the camera just does a little, you know, spin, and all of a sudden it's sideways, or you've seen the two characters and you start fighting. And the fighting is, it feels like you aren't punished for not knowing what you're doing. And if you're playing at like medium, I always felt like I wasn't being overwhelmed by the enemies. I was always having fun, and when I died, it was because maybe I did try to like just mash and not do a couple of sweet moves, play a little defensively type stuff.
I feel like when I tried Injustice, the first one, there were specific techniques or moves, I guess I would say, that they each fight, and I don't think I got through the whole game, so it might have just been the first few chapters. But it seemed like when you would come up against an enemy, there was like some specific thing it wanted you to execute to learn, almost like a tutorial, but I felt like it was built into a lot of the different fights. Like everything that I went into, there was like some new mechanic to deal with the new abilities of the boss, almost like the single player was kind of prepping you for multiplayer PvP combat. So was that a similar kind of thing? Like you, in order to get through a fight, like you had to execute a specific combo to deflect your enemy's super powerful move, or to get behind them, or, you know, whatever the thing was that you had to do to beat that person?
No. This one's more in service of the story, and the actual single player campaign doesn't feel like a lot of campaigns that launch around competitive type games, where it's its own thing and it's telling a story. And the cutscenes are really well done. There's a lot of work put into them. And the fights, it makes sense when you fight someone. And there's some really cool moments.
So it's not just like training, like, okay, this is how Batman fights Wonder Woman. This is how Batman fights Superman.
No, I mean, you know, it's subtly training you, because I'm sure, you know, when I booted up for the first time, I hadn't played the game yet, obviously. Mm-hmm. So me playing as Batman, that's the first character I'm introduced to. So, yeah, it's a matter of getting in there and just playing these characters. And you do play maybe like four or five fights, and then you move into, you get a longer cutscene, then you move into the second chapter. And something they introduced in this one, I don't think they had in the first one, was dual character chapters, where it allowed you to pick between characters. And that made sense in that, you know, there's a chapter.
Oh, so not like a four-man fight, like not 2v2.
No.
Okay.
No, you
but so you had a choice of characters. That's cool.
Exactly.
And I don't remember that being in the first one.
No, I don't think it was. And they played it up really well, where there's a lot of characters, obviously, they're superheroes, they're fighting as teams. The first team you're introduced to is Green Arrow and his Black Canary, which are
Canary.
You know, husband and wife. They have a kid, and they kind of happily explain why Black Canary wasn't in the first game, which is the fact that she was, you know, home taking care of their new child. I didn't know, but spoiler alert for those watching Green Arrow. I don't know, yeah, unless really. She dies, I don't know. But
I don't know if Arrow follows all of the canon, or if Injustice follows the canon of anything.
I don't know. Like,
they could be living in totally different universes, or I guess they probably are living in totally different universes, because this is a universe where Superman's a bad guy. So
Superman is very much a dictator in this, and you know, so yeah. Quickly going back, when you presented with two characters, it tells a story in that it presents your two characters, and then it says, "Oh, we're gonna fight these other two guys," but really it's just a choice between the two, and you either choose left or right, and then that initiates a different cutscene depending on who you choose, and then goes into the fight. And there's a slight difference, but something enough there to kind of justify the fact that there are two people and you get to choose one. But in the story, it's not about, it doesn't do what a lot of comic book or movies do based on comics, where the sequel is just the first movie retold a different way. You know, Superman's still evil, so he breaks out and we got to save the world again. In this one, Brainiac shows up, and the lore is that Brainiac destroyed Krypton. It wasn't an issue with the planet. It was the fact that Brainiac came in and downloaded a city and then overloaded the planet and it exploded. So in this one, Brainiac shows up on Earth, and then Batman's like, oh shit, we gotta kill this guy. He seems to know a lot about Superman. I might have to go ask Superman how to defeat him. And then Superman's like, well, if you let me out, you can't defeat him alone, blah, blah, blah. And then it kind of goes from there, and you can kind of imagine comic book movie how it goes. But
yeah,
I'm really enjoying it. And honestly, I was worried that I would beat the campaign and then I would kind of fall off the game. But there's other single player modes in there, specifically one called the Multiverse, which is a set of rotating challenges that change every 24 to 48 hours. And when you go in there, you can play as different characters to earn different gear. So that's the unique thing in this one, is that all your characters have a set of gear that increases their stats as they level up, which is really cool.
Is that just for single player, or does that cross over to multiplayer?
I believe it's removed for ranked, but it is available everywhere else. You're actually,
which makes sense, right?
Exactly.
Because it's a fighting game, so it should just pretty much be skill, right? Like, you shouldn't be going up against somebody with different gear levels or different player levels or skill trees or whatever. Like, you should just have like character one, character two, fight.
Exactly. And it comes down to skill, as opposed to your character having a better cape.
Right.
But in this one, it is nice that you can collect gear, and then you wonder, well, why would it matter if I have a level 20 Supergirl as opposed to a level 10 Superman? It actually helps you in the multiverse, because a lot of those challenges require a high level character. And I actually went into the multiverse a week ago and played a trial for a DLC character. So they opened up this DLC character for everyone to try in this multiverse to actually see if you want to play as that. The character turned out to be Sub-Zero, but which is not a DC character, but I don't know. Anyways, it's just one of those things that they've packed a lot of stuff into this game, and it's refreshing to play a competitive focused game that has a lot of, I don't want to say filler, because that's not an accurate way of putting it, but like just content. There's a lot of content there. It's not like Overwatch, where they're just like, it's competitive and we'll put some comics over here. It's not like Street Fighter V, where it's competitive, but we'll like tack on a story mode later on. Even like Splatoon 2, I hear that there is more modes in there and the campaign's beefed up a little bit, but I'm not hearing people as excited about that content in Splatoon 2 as people were for Injustice 2. And I picked it up on sale, and I recommend it for those folks who are fans of DC, because this is probably, again, one of the better stories you're going to experience in this universe. Although I will admit, we're going to talk about Comic-Con later, but I don't know about you, but I watched the Justice League trailer, and honestly, that looks kind of good. Does that make me a bad person? It looks kind of good.
I know, but I'm so worried about just how the DC movies look from the trailers, because I mean, I feel like I've said this before.
Batman versus Superman trailers were pretty good until they were bad, Jocelyn, in which we were like, uh-oh. I haven't had that happen. Although Aquaman, douchey Aquaman, still not a fan, but it is Jason Momoa, and maybe it'll work out on film, but I don't know. I just, part of me is kind of excited about Justice League, and having played Injustice 2, where they have the Justice League basically split down the middle, and Wonder Woman is just the worst. Oh my God. And Superman's no better, but Batman's all righteous, and the Flash is kind of like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm fast. And it's pretty good.
I feel like that's the description of the Flash from every iteration of him ever.
It's how I know him best. I'm really fast, but I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, in terms of Injustice 2, another thing that NetherRealm usually does is they have like a free-to-play phone game. I'm also playing that. It's dumb.
You always get sucked into the mobile tie-in apps.
Yeah. Don't play it. It's bad. You'll wonder why Ryan's wasting his time, but you know what? Sometimes you just got 15 seconds to play a little thing and tappity tap, and it's like, oh, I earned something. That's real fun. And then, you know, it works both ways, where in the app for playing the game, you unlock little, you know, gems, like the currency. And then if you play the app in the game, you unlock what they're called, mother boxes, which when you open, you get new gear for your character. So there is a little cross-pollination there. And it's, if you're looking for a free-to-play companion, it's one of the better ones, but they usually do hit a wall where you're like a fast out, like, why am I playing this? This is a waste of time. I'm done. I'm not there yet, but I'm sure by next week I will.
I feel like the last one that I played outside of the Blizzard World of Warcraft companion apps, the Legion app and the Armory, other than those, I think the last one that I played that was actually a really good tie-in was Black Flag, the Assassin's Creed mobile app. I feel like that was actually really good.
Yeah, this one doesn't have as much of a cross-pollination as that one did, where you were doing your little side missions on the side. Mm-hmm. The characters don't really sync. The only sync you're getting is just that resource exchange. And, you know, it's like most of those free-to-play games where you're collecting heroes and you're unlocking stars and you're earning three or four different types of currencies. I realize as I explain it, it sounds like a waste of time. I'm wasting everybody's time who's listening to this just talking about it. But I mean, if you are into that site, you know, wasting time, hell, it's free on the App Store.
It's a real good time waster.
Hey, we all have those little apps, and they usually don't last long unless it's like Fire Emblem Heroes, in which I'm still playing. So,
well, speaking of time wasters, I found probably the best time waster since Stardew Valley.
Oh, and what's this?
This one's called Yonder, and it's funny because it's not one that we covered in our What's Coming Out This Summer, but it came out last week, and I've played about 4 hours of it this afternoon, and it's like shut your brain off fun, I guess, is the best way to talk. It's a very, very pretty game. Mm-hmm. And it has kind of elements of exploration, elements of questing, although it is one giant fetch quest. That's what every single quest is like, hey, I'm a trader and I need 10 stone and 3 wood. So come back when you've got it. And then you bring it back when you've got it. And, you know, then you're rewarded with something. So it is a huge, just total fetch quest.
So is it on PC? Because I'm looking for it, and Yonder picks up a new game, Yonder the Cloud Catcher Chronicles. Is that what
this
is? Yes,
that's
it. Oh, okay. Yeah. It looks very pretty.
It is. It has a really, really pretty art style. And I feel like whoever programmed it like, get the F out of my head, because I swear that as soon as I start to kind of think, I'm getting a little bored, things are looking a little bit samey, I come around a corner and there's some new thing that I've discovered with some really pretty visual, and I'm kind of like, ooh, what's that? And so it's like my interest is just starting to wane, and then I have that, ooh, what's that moment, and it comes back around for me.
Neat.
So, and like the timing on it, I noticed it like 4 or 5 times today, how it had this perfect timing for me. And I was like, how did they know exactly where to put these things and like exactly the path that I would take? So, I mean, it's based pretty much around exploration. There is a very, very thin storyline to it, but, the parts of the story that I've actually completed are, they were very, very simple. It's very much like, go here, do one thing, go here, do another thing. Like, there's absolutely no combat whatsoever. So there's no, like, gear. You cannot die. It's just exploration. There's crafting, there's farming, there's trading. I actually really like the trading system. It's basically, like, there's no currency in the game. It's just, like, I have these things. They're, you know, have different values, like 1, 5, 10, and 20. And the vendor in the town has stuff for 100. Mm. So I have to give him 100 or more's worth of goods, and then he'll trade with me. But I can trade anything for anything. So I like that trading system. It's just... Sorry.
No, I was just curious. So you mentioned like a trading system. Is it about making money? Because I watched a bit of the trailer because I wasn't sure like whether this was... the game you're talking about, but I watched the trailer again, very pretty. I think when it's in motion, it doesn't look quite as, and again, I was just watching a trailer. It didn't look quite as good in motion as it did in the screenshots. I don't know whether it was just the compression or not, but, the thing that looked really cool is that it did kind of try to tell a story with that trailer, but I felt like you're saying it's a little lighter on story and more on just an exploration. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to escape or?
So, well, no. So this is the thing. You're coming back to your island, your home island, after a great amount of time away. And you come back to discover that there is this, murk is what it's called. And it's basically this like purple cloudy stuff that no one can live inside. And so you show up on the island and you can see the spirits, and so you have to go and free the spirits, which is usually some sort of puzzle to solve. And then as you accumulate spirit friends, then they help you dispel the murk. So you're basically going around and trying to dispel this to open up new paths. You're solving puzzles to find the spirits. And then some of the spirits are hidden behind quests. Some of the spirits are, you know, like there's all kinds of different ways to find them. So I think it really appeals to my kind of gotta collect them all type, just completionist, without it being too challenging. It's like, they give you a certain number of quests in every zone to complete. There's 8 zones across the island. They give you, I think there's something like 7 or 8 different crafting professions that you can do. So you can do like cooking and carpentry and construction and metalworking. And there's a whole bunch of different like professions that you can max out. So there's all that kind of stuff. There's cats. There's little adorable kittens just all over the island that you have to save. Some of them are up trees. Some of them are like trapped in crates, like they're just kind of all over. So it's very much like a, you have collected X number of X total things, and there are like a bazillion different collections in the game to fill out. That's basically it. I think it does have some balance issues because I haven't been doing very much of anything religiously. Mm-hmm. I haven't been, you know, farming religiously or gathering religiously or anything, and I've never like had to save up for anything, right? So I've either had all the materials to craft the thing I need to craft, or I've had enough in my bags from just wandering around that I can trade to get whatever the next quest item is. So I think that they have a little bit of a balance issue there. I think some of the things like fish and milk and something else. I can't remember what the other thing is, but there are some things in the game that seem like super valuable. Like I caught one fish that was worth like 50 or 100 gold or something. And then so it's like, okay, I have four of these fish because I found the pond where they are, and now I can basically get anything in the game that I need. So I think their economy is a little bit skewed.
Oh, okay.
But other than that, I mean, like, it's a turn your brain off kind of thing, the way that Stardew Valley was. Although Stardew Valley had all the combat and everything else, it was a much deeper game than this. Yonder is very kind of surface level, but it's really good to just run around and explore. I felt like there's no mount system in the game. You're walking everywhere you go, but I never felt like I was going too slowly. So that was kind of nice. Like, I never felt the need to go faster for a sprint button or anything else. Just the speed that you naturally travel felt really good with the size of the island. It didn't feel too big the way Breath of the Wild did. It feels like small enough that I still feel like the world is fairly lived in. There's enough stuff for me to find and interact with on a, you know, without running too far between things. It was such a good, like, I didn't even realize that I played that much time today.
Wow.
Like, I just kind of turned it on and got a little bit lost in it. My save file says I'm about 35% done. And I think I only just got my very first, like, novice badge in the Carpentry Guild. So there's no way I've finished 35% of everything there is to do in the game. So I think the percentage on my save file is probably the story, because I would say from what I've kind of read without too many spoilers, seems like the story is, again, like everything else, it's a very like shallow story. It's a very like shallow crafting system. It's a very shallow farming system. It just like has enough to kind of whet your appetite for these things without being a game that you're going to sink like 100 hours into.
Right.
So I actually think like this is not going to be for everybody. Like, if you like survival crafting games, then you're going to want to go for something more along the lines of Ark. If you like something with a deeper story, then you're going to want to, again, go somewhere else. But if you are somebody who's more along the lines of Ryan and I, who needs, you know, a 10 to 15 hour experience, this is a great 10 to 15 hour experience if you liked something like Stardew Valley, because it is very much like trading and planting and helping, you know, people living in villages. And like I said, the visuals are stunning. There are some really amazing things that I found in the game so far.
It sounds very much like, you know, we look for these experiences where we just get to sit back and relax, turn the brain off and listen to some pretty music and look at some pretty visuals and just have, you know, fun and relax. And I find I try to squeeze those games in on iOS, and usually it's some sort of stupid like puzzler or clicker or whatever.
That's kind of what this feels like, actually. It feels like a, because I'm playing on PC, but I think it definitely came out for PlayStation. I don't know if it's out on Xbox or not, but it's definitely PlayStation and PC, because I bought it on Steam. That's how I found it, actually, is I was just loading up Steam yesterday and I was like, oh, I wonder what's new. Like, I've been away for a week. What's going on? And this is one of my like new release things that I should check out. And I was like, oh, this actually looks really cool. I hadn't really paid attention to this one before, so I'm going to check it out. And it does feel like it could be an iPad game, like really, really easily. It kind of has that level of complexity. And like I said, the crafting system, I think it's a good level of like, I don't have to think too hard. If I'm just like, okay, I want to make like a bundle of sticks, it means I need, you know, like five sticks and a vine. Like it is intuitive, I think, is the thing I like the most. And the amount of materials is like things that I very easily can find. Like, by the time I made it from the beach where my ship wrecked up to the first town, I had, you know, 20 vines and 10 stone. Like I had tons of crafting materials for a little short little trip. So
yeah,
it's I mean, like I said, it's a very, very kind of shallow, not too complex, turn your brain off and look at something pretty. Like, there, like I said, there's not a whole lot of story to it either, but I am really enjoying it because there is a lot to see and there's a lot to explore. So if you kind of are looking for an experience that's just kind of exploring and looking at pretty stuff with like little pepperings of other things you like from other games, then give it a shot.
Yeah. It's nice to have something quiet to play. And I feel like we don't get that a lot, especially in the fall. And I knew nothing about this game. When you put it in the notes, I was kind of like, what the hell is this? I usually know like kind of what's going on, but
This totally flew under the radar, and I don't know because I can't even remember the whole rest of the title. It's Yonder, the Cloud Crystal something Chronicle. I don't know. It has a really long title, and this is probably just me being dumb, but I feel like usually things that have like super duper long titles like that, that have chronicles and crystals and everything else, they tend to be super like Japanese RPG kind of like, they're usually really in depth. They're usually just these kind of, if you're into that universe, then they're really good, but the universe is hard to get into because it's so complex. So I tend to shy away from games like that. Mm-hmm. So it was really the visual and like the trailer just pulled me right into this, because I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's not kind of the visual that I was expecting. I was expecting something more along the lines of like a Final Fantasy something, and this is not that. So what is this? And then I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, this actually looks really cool. So yeah,
the visuals are honestly blew me away. And it's been a while since I've played one of those like indie darlings that feels very just beauty for the sake of beauty. And you know, it's awesome. And it kind of, you know, the art style kind of reminds me a bit of like a more colorful Journey, like a more just mm-hmm. in your face, like bombastic colors type thing. And
you know, it's very bright.
Yeah.
And I think, just back to the basically name of the game, I think that if I saw it on, like, a big list of, like, coming soon, it's the kind of title that I would just totally skip over.
The title sort of, I was looking at it, and even watching the trailer, I was like, is this, like, a Legend of Zelda type game? It doesn't really, the first trailer that's there doesn't really explore the fact that it is an exploration game, more of, mm-hmm. it seems more of, like, a quest-driven game where you're running around defeating enemies and stuff. But now that I think about it, yeah, if you look at that title, like, Yonder, the Crystal Cloud Chronicles
of, yeah.
It just seems like a game that kind of screams RPG, like you were saying, or Zelda game. And it's nice that it is a calm, cool, relaxed game. And I wonder if it's getting enough, if it's getting some press. It's nice that we can talk about it. But I've, again, just, it's, I guess I've been very busy lately, so.
Yeah, and the reviews on Steam are mostly positive, which was another thing when I clicked on it. I was expecting, you know, like, anytime there's something that looks kind of cool, but I've never heard of it on Steam, and then I click on it, usually it's, like, mostly negative user reviews, and it's, like, some tiny indie title.
Yeah.
But when I clicked on this one, it had mostly positive reviews, and so I was kind of like, oh, all right, cool. Like, the Steam community seems to be behind it. It's this neat-looking exploration thing that I haven't seen before, so let's do it. So
yeah, there's a review here says, you know, a father put his kids to work in it. So, I mean, maybe that sounds pretty good. Just put your kids to mining resources and gathering stuff.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like if you had kids, this would very much be... It's a very kid-friendly game because, like I said, it's exploration. There is no combat. It's impossible to die. Like, there's no damage. There's no health meters of any sort. So you jump off a cliff and then you just kind of, like, pop open this rainbow umbrella and you float down to the ground. If you jump into water that's too deep, it just kind of like fades to black and then pops you back up where you jumped into the water. So you literally can't die. Nothing is hostile to you. You're just exploring and trying to help the citizens of the island by clearing the murk. And I'm sure there's a bigger story to it. Descendant of the savior of the something or whatever.
Maybe I'm a spirit myself.
Like, who knows? Like, but I'm sure there's some sort of big broad epic ending, but it's just, I feel like it's the kind of thing that, because it doesn't incorporate things that are too complex, and because there's no combat, because there's no health meters, if you've got young kids, this is probably a really good thing to play with them, because they can literally just run wherever they want, and then they can do whatever they want. They can go pick up bison poop on your farm, or they can, you know, like, go help you move through all of your guild stuff. They can learn crafting, and you know, I feel like it's very, like I said, it's very shallow, which makes it really good for really young kids, I think.
So I'm wondering, quick question before we move on, is it a game where once the story's over, can you continue playing? Is it like a reoccurring? Yes. Okay, that's good. That's interesting.
So you could, if you wanted to, because I think some of the reviews that I read said they played through the story right away, because again, there's no combat, so there's no kind of difficulty writing to the story. So you can go and figure out all the puzzles and just beeline it on along the kind of main storyline. And you can do all of that apparently in about 2 hours. And then at the end of that storyline, then it says like, oh, you've, you know, cured the island of the Merc or whatever the end of the story is. I don't know. I'm just assuming that that's one of the things. But basically, like, you've done the thing, you've finished the story, but there's still a lot more to explore. And then you can keep doing all of your questing. So, and all of your exploring. So there's it lets you keep playing after you finish the story. And most people seem to say it's somewhere in the realm of 15 to 20 hours of playtime to do all of the crafting and to kind of max everything out. And there's a lot of people calling for more content. And I think that, you know, more content in this world would be really cool, because I really enjoyed it.
Cool. Well, it sounds awesome. And honestly, it's nice to discover something that you've heard nothing about, because in this day and age, when things are covered out the wazoo, it's surprises are few and far between. So that's good.
I wanted to take a minute here to thank our new patron. Our patron of the week this week is Mike. Thank you so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. You can head over there if you would like to see more content from us. You can also, obviously, we have game night. So if you're a patron of Gamers Inn, you can come and play with us every third Thursday of the month. We did it was really early this month, right? Because July 1st was like a Thursday or something. So
we did it early.
Thursday was early, yeah.
Well, we did it early because you were on vacation, because the third Thursday would have been last week. Right. We played
Smite.
Oh, yeah. We played Smite. there's a bear that came out. Jim's excited. I remember that much.
So again, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. We have a patron ad this week as well from The Geek Review. The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything for an honest consumer review. The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. So we thank everyone for their support over on Patreon of The Gamersin. Our topic of the week this week is going to be San Diego Comic-Con news. As you guys know, San Diego Comic-Con was this past week, and we had some, not too much, because obviously it's a Comic-Con, it's not a gaming con, but there was some gaming news. Probably the biggest thing as far as Ryan and I are concerned is Wolf Among Us Season 2 is coming in 2018. That was a game that both Ryan and I really enjoyed. It was probably actually the last Telltale title that we actually played and thoroughly enjoyed, and we're kind of itching for the next season, because there were some pretty interesting kind of things in that game that were never explained, not to mention the kind of cliffhangers at the end there. So Season 2 is really warranted, I think.
Yeah, but here's the crazy part. You mentioned the cliffhanger. I don't really remember what the cliffhanger was. I should look it up. But they're saying that they're leaving that cliffhanger a mystery, and the game will feature Bigsby, the wolf. Is that his name?
Bigby.
Anyways, Bigby, he'll be the main character. He's in it, but they haven't gone anywhere past that, besides the fact that they won't be addressing the mystery at the end of the first game. That will continue to be a mystery, which is interesting, an interesting way to put it. And basically they said they just want to keep that mystery there for fans to continue to ponder, but you will be getting a return to this universe based on Fable, the comic series, where you're playing as the big bad wolf.
Which is interesting, exciting, because the first one, it was a bit of a departure, right? It was like a prequel, but assuming that the kind of Fable universe didn't necessarily exist. Mm-hmm. So it was like it took place using characters from the comics before the comics, but then threw canon out the window. So basically people who were alive in the Fable comics could die in the Fable games in the Wolf Among Us games, because it's not called the Fable games, but in the Wolf Among Us, they were basically given free license to use the characters however they saw fit. So it's interesting that then they're like, they wouldn't solve the questions, because it's not like we can just read the comics and then we'll know what the answer was to like the big mystery in season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I just remember Wolf Among Us and looking back at it, and the fact that it was a great story, and probably the last time Telltale has just put out a, like we said, a really great game that we both enjoyed and we covered thoroughly on the show, and the fact that they're going back to it, and the fact that they've taken this long to go back to it, has me excited that they're not just cashing in, because you look at what they've done with The Walking Dead and Batman, for example, where
were the other two big announcements, basically, of San Diego Comic-Con, is they were like, okay, Batman's coming in August, and then early 2018, we're going to have the next Walking Dead. We're going back to Clementine. But you're right. They're very heavily cashing in on those two franchises.
Yeah, the Batman one is interesting because that it felt like that series like just ended, and they're treating it as a television series where this is literally season two coming a year after season one premiered, which is interesting to see them kind of like realize the potential of an episodic game and staying true to fashion with the way TV works these days. But hopefully the story, I mean, it's Batman. I heard really good things about the first Batman. It was still a Telltale game, so I didn't quite jump on board, but
We got burned really hard with the Game of Thrones Telltale game.
Oh, man. We were so negative on that. And finally, people have finally caught up. I feel like the joke of greatest Telltale episode of blank is greatest ever blank. And those reviews have stopped. And people kind of say, yeah, it's Telltale Guardians of the Galaxy episode one. Yeah. The fourth and final season of The Walking Dead, as someone who's enjoyed those seasons but have fallen flat since one, like one was really, really good, and then two and Michonne, and then three kind of just felt like cash-ins. Here's a character from the comics. Oh, he's going to go away now. And it's just, it's literally what happened in the third game. And then they come back at the end. And then, you know, it's just, it's really weird. And I like that they're saying fourth and final season because it gives them an opportunity to tell a story different from every other Telltale game where you have to have a cliffhanger. You have to sell another game. And I'm not saying they'll never go back to The Walking Dead. Well, it's what put them on the map. But the fact that this is the end of Clementine's story allows them to tell a story that is finished, that is finite. Whether it is she walks into the sunset, 50 years later she's still killing zombies, or she dies saving someone. And it's all based on your choices. It goes back to the whole, you know, these choice-based games are a diamond, where it starts really at the beginning, goes outwards, and then comes back to one tiny little bow where they can continue off in the next game. The fact that this is the final one means they can just shotgun blast.
They can just go really in and spread.
Exactly. So that's exciting, but not quite as exciting as The Wolf Among Us because, I did not honestly think they would go back to that. It had been too long. It's like Telltale had left that one for too long.
Right, because so was this something is 2012, but this wasn't 2012, right? No. 2012 is Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, this was 3 years ago, so it would have been 2014. Like I remember early 2014, and then we covered it into the summer. And it was just one of those games that like it was a I think what did it for me is it's a franchise that I knew nothing about, but it was familiar in the sense that it was these fairy tale characters. And it was an interesting concept of these fairy tale characters living in the real world and how that worked. And just the way they interacted together just felt really strong and just a great adaptation as opposed to some of the other stuff Telltale does, where it just feels like, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy is popular. Let's get Star-Lord in there, Rocket, Gamora. Oh, let's get that Drax in there. Let's make them all sound similar to the movies, but not exactly the same. Like, we can't afford Chris Pratt, but we can afford a guy who sounds like Chris Pratt. And I don't know, like, it just feels kind of cash-in type thing. Like, it is Guardians of the Galaxy, but it's not the Guardians of the Galaxy that you are expecting, you know, because you're into the movies or the comic books or the television series. But the fact that there really wasn't a lot of video game news that kind of jumped out. I kind of heard that outside of the big DC and Marvel news, there wasn't a lot of comic news at all from San Diego Comic-Con. It was kind of barren, and I don't know. I don't think usually there's a lot of video game news that comes out of it, but it's nice that Telltale is kind of using it as their like launching point. I don't even think this was announced at Comic-Con. I don't know.
Yeah, they do work with a lot of comic book properties, right? Like Walking Dead, Wolf Among Us is fables, Batman is comics. Like, you know, aside from Game of Thrones, they pretty much pull exclusively from comic stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because Guardians is comics too. Yeah, so definitely. It would make sense that the Telltale would announce their next big thing at Comic-Con. Yeah. The other thing that we got at Comic-Con that is video game related is the Ready Player One trailer. So, Ryan, have you ever read Ready Player One?
No, but I hear really good things, and I kind of felt like if I put this in here, is she going to ask, did I ever read it? And then I'm going to ask, no, did you ever read it? And you might say, no, I never read it. Why'd you put this in the notes?
I did read it, yes.
Okay, perfect. You did read it. Awesome. Yes. No, I hadn't read it, but I know it's one of those big... It's those big books, those big nerd books that people love, and I know that sounds terrible when I said it out loud, but it's beloved by our type of folks.
That's exactly what I thought before I read it too. Oh. And that is what I thought until literally San Diego Comic-Con happened and we got this trailer, because it seemed like everyone and their geeky mom was saying how much they hate Ready Player One and how it's pandering to nerd culture. And I was like, wait, what? Like, the whole reason that I read it is because people said, like, oh, yeah, this book is great. And I can see the complaints with it. And I think I read it. So just over my vacation, I read his second book called Armada. And I think it, if anything, got worse in Armada. But that just might be because I'm not remembering it so much from Ready Player One. And it's basically very, very, very heavy on the geeky references. Like, I found specifically in Armada, it was like, I'm going to make my point and I'm going to use four examples in one sentence that are all going to play on somebody's geeky heartstrings. It's like, oh, you don't know Star Wars? Well, I'm going to throw Star Trek in there and then Space Invaders and, you know, like something else. And it was very much like it laid it on really, really thick. I don't remember it being like that in Ready Player One. Ready Player One used geek references more so to explain the universe. Okay. Because basically what it is like, it's this poor kid who lives in the stacks, which you see in the trailer, which I think look awesome, by the way. It's like exactly how I pictured it in my head. It's basically like a trailer park, and they ran out of like horizontal room, so they started putting trailers on top of trailers, and that's exactly what that looked like to me. I thought they did a really good job. So it's this poor kid from the stacks who's given this rig because everyone, like, travel has become so expensive and everything has just become so expensive that they live in a virtual world instead of the real one. So that's where he goes to school, too. And so he has this whole rig because it's how he attends school. So it's like a government-supplied technology thing.
Right.
And then he goes into this world and the world is then built by everyone's imagination. And that's one of the big things that people have been saying is like, oh, they're not very imaginative, blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, but of course you're going to be influenced by pop culture. And if I were to go and build something in a video game, it would probably be something along the lines of some of my favorite fandoms. Like, I might recreate the spaceship from Firefly or something. Like, that would be a thing that I would do, because like, why imagine a new spaceship when I can pay homage to one of my favorite things that I'm a fan of? Like, it makes perfect sense to me that the whole entire thing would be full of references to other pop culture things. And I also really like that what they've done is they've gone and got the licensing for a lot of the things that were mentioned in the book. It's not like, well, this is the company that's making it, so we're only going to have references from that one company. They've actually gone out and licensed everything so that they have a whole mix of pop culture in it. So I think that that was a really big check mark for Ready Player One. But I think it looks pretty freaking epic, and it's probably going to be really fun. Like,
I don't understand the whole, like, you know, oh, this is pandering to nerd cultures. Like, come on, guys. That's what we want. That's what everybody wants. Every once in a while, it's nice to be loved and pandered to. Like, it's nice to put your feet up and enjoy, the Iron Giant. Haven't seen him in a while. That's really great. I don't understand why people hate fun, Jocelyn. I really don't. I look at this trailer and I think this looks fun, and it's got a lot of my fun things in it. It's like every Star Wars movie that's going to come out for the next 5 years. Why aren't people throwing that under the bus because it's pandering? Why aren't people throwing the new Star Trek stuff under the bus? It's just pandering to something that you enjoyed as a child or as an adult or whatever, and that's fine. You can tell interesting stories using nostalgia to build up those stories. And I mean, you're talking to a Nintendo fan here. Like, it's basically what their business is built on. But the fact that we're... or what was that other movie that came out? It was a Disney animation film. I had it. It was like Wreck-It Ralph. It was kind of another one of those built up on nerd culture. And, you know, it had Bowser in it and a bunch of other characters, Pac-Man, stuff like that. And it's nice when our the stuff we're fans of are acknowledged on the big screen, and then everybody gets to experience it. Mm-hmm. I have not read the book. I will definitely look at reading the book before the movie comes out, because I have heard really good things.
It's a really, really easy read. Like, sure. I think it took me like maybe 4 or 5 hours. Like, it's super, nice. Super, super quick. It is, and I think that's probably part of the nerd, not necessarily rage, but criticism, is that, you know, you can read that book in 4 to 5 hours versus like Game of Thrones, which is like, you really got to slog through that one.
Man, you can't always eat the buffet. Sometimes you just got to get the granola bar and just head out the door. You know, and you're talking to someone who definitely has no interest right now in reading a 1,000-page tome. But if you're telling me there's
you could pick up Ready Player One and you could read it on your lunch hours this week and you'd finish it.
See, that sounds great.
Yeah. it's super, super easy to read. It's super quick. The basic premise of it is that so everyone lives in this Oasis game. Mm-hmm. It's part video game and part educational tool, part vacation. Like, they basically just like, the whole world is in this virtual reality space now. Yeah. And how you interface with it, it goes, you know, gets more and more complex based on how much money you have. Like, you can have a full immersion chamber, or you can have like the dude in the trailer with just his little goggles and his little handheld things. Yeah. So, I mean, there's all kinds of levels of immersion. And the idea is that the founder of the game has died, and he said, I placed a, basically a giant puzzle in the game. Whoever finds the final key and solves the final clue then gets my fortune. So then it's a race for everyone in the world to try to figure out how exactly to solve the puzzle and win the fortune. So then, and you see these guys in the trailer too, there's this, like, corporation basically that's trying to gain control of the Oasis, and that's all the guys that you see, like, in unison getting into their cars and driving away. And so it's like a race for like the common guy versus the corporation, and it's everyone racing through this video game, and there's all this cool combat and everything else to see who's going to essentially control the game that has become reality.
Yeah,
basically.
And this is Spielberg, right? And he makes good movies every once in a while. Some would say very often. So maybe this is the first really great mass market video game movie. Is this something that we could probably latch on to and be like, okay, guys, we got one. Yay. Or does it not count?
I think it's gonna have a lot of mainstream appeal. Mm-hmm. So I think if anything was going to do it, it's going to be something more along these lines. It's going to pull on all different kinds of nostalgia, because it's not just video game nostalgia. The story takes place kind of half in the real world and half in the game. But it pulls from, like I mentioned, all this other different pop culture. Like, you see there's a whole bunch of references from movies, like there's Back to the Future references, mm-hmm. and all kinds of crazy stuff that appeals to people outside of a gaming audience. It's not like something like the Warcraft movie, where it's like, if you aren't crazy big into fantasy, or if you aren't crazy big into just Warcraft and Blizzard, like, you might not understand that movie. It's not going to pull you in. This kind of has a little bit for everybody. It's got the kind of dystopian future for some people. It's got the video game for other people. It's got, you know, little pulls of pop culture and other movies for other people. So it has a very broad appeal. So I don't even know if you can call it like a video game movie per se.
Right. It's more like a pop culture.
I think it's more like a geek culture, pop culture movie, I think. Okay. And so I think it's going to do really well. And I think that it's going to be a really fun thing to go and enjoy, and I know I'm gonna enjoy it. Yeah. I thought the book was good, like, popcorny fun, like, again, very like surface level, not very complex, not very deep, like but it was fun. There's nothing wrong, not everything has to be super duper always complex.
I did not I missed the hate on this. Was it specifically due to the trailer? Like, I had only caught, like, the trailer.
Yeah, it was the trailer. Well, oh, it was basically, like, they released the trailer, and then everyone was like, bah, I hate that. Look at all this stupid pop culture, blah, and, you know, pandering to nerds and blah-de-blah-de-blah. Blah, blah.
You need to, like, follow happier people, Jocelyn, is basically what we're getting at here.
Maybe I just follow a lot of snarky people. That is possible. But I feel like it's the kind of thing that I think people would be really into until it becomes a bestseller. And then it's like, ah, too many people like this. I don't like this anymore.
Oh, man. Sometimes I wonder how the internet does not burn down every day.
I feel like it's the kind of thing that was really highly recommended to me, like, 4 years ago. And there was, like, a couple of people talking about it. And they were like, oh, have you heard about this book? It's really good. It's really nerdy. Check it out. And then, you know, more the kind of, like, word of mouth kind of spread in the geek community. And then all of a sudden it's a bestseller. And then now people are like, oh, actually, I didn't like it this whole time because hipster reasons.
So am I an internet bum if I read it after the trailer's out? Like, am I not cool now that I'm reading
totally,
it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, man, you missed the boat. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that's unfortunate. Well, I guess
you
I'll
should
just...
You should still read it. No. But, I mean, maybe you don't even have to. Maybe you just go see the movie.
I read the Martian was a similar experience. It's not quite like geek culture, but it's a, you know, it was one of those nerdy books, and a lot of people talked about how great it was. And it's actually the last book I read, and it was really well done. And it was only because the movie was coming out. Hell, Matt Damon's face was plastered all over the book cover. And I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Whatever gets you reading. And I used to love reading, and it's something I wish I would do more of. And honestly, going back to the top of the show with vacation, I feel like that's kind of something we need to do as people who play a lot of video games, to just be like, the Switch is nice, and it's nice that you brought it with you to play it every once in a while. But sometimes it's just good to sit down with a book, and I don't even have one of those, like, e-reader things. I feel like if I were to bring my iPad, it would just be too distracting to read on.
Yeah.
But I guess I could get it in that paper they call it. I think it's paper.
Yes. Yes, yeah. They still do, in fact, make paper copies of things.
It's considering how much I love to put shit on shelves, it probably wouldn't hurt to buy a book or two.
A book, just one.
Just one. Well, to go with the, you know, Zelda giant tome art books that we have from, yeah. Anyways, yeah, good stuff.
Speaking of books, if you are interested in reviews of books and other type things, then you should check out Weekly News Desk. It's a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or weeklynews.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. I think that's going to do it for us tonight. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV, along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, and Embrace the Spoilers is returning. We will be recording our first episode of Embrace the Spoilers next Monday, so make sure you guys don't miss that. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Brian is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at TheGamersIn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AMoveTV. If you'd like to email the show and let us know if we missed anything about San Diego Comic-Con, you can do so by emailing info@GamersInPodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Good night, everyone.